You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to The Profile podcast. God calls us to use our influence to share his love and goodness. For some, this is in leadership. I'm Andy Peck, and for the past 19 years, I've been interviewing Christians to find out how to lead better. Taking the initiative isn't always easy, so I hope you'll benefit from this latest conversation. The Profile podcast is brought to you by Premier Christianity magazine. Subscribe today and get full online access and the print magazine every month at premierchristianity.com.
You will no doubt recall that in Luke 4, at the start of his public ministry, Jesus entered the synagogue and quoted the passage from Isaiah 61. "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Poverty, of course, extends beyond mere economic poverty, but certainly includes it. And I'm joined today by a man who has sought to serve the urban poor all his ministry life. His name is Ash Barker. Originally from Australia, his journey has taken him and his wife from ministering in the Springvale area of Melbourne to founding and heading up a charity, Urban Neighbours of Hope, in Bangkok, Thailand. And then in 2014, he came to Winston Green, Birmingham, to set up a ministry entitled Seedbeds, to raise up diverse streams of local community leaders in the UK and around the world. His story is included in his book, No Wastelands: How to Grow Seedbeds of Shalom in Your Neighbourhood. And I'm delighted he's joining me today. So welcome, Ash. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's 8 years, far too long. One or two people have said, "Hey, you need to have Ash Barker back." So there we go. By popular demand. Now, some listeners won't remember back to when you were back on. So give us an outline of seedbeds, maybe explaining the difference between a seedbed and what some would understand as a church plant.
Yeah, I mean, the name wasn't original to me. A guy called John Perkins, he's a civil rights leader. He was a brilliant man, started the Christian Community Development Association in the States, which is a huge network. And when I was leaving Bangkok, I lived there for 12 years, Bangkok's biggest slum, and transitioning out, I met with him at a conference we were running in Kuala Lumpur. It's one of those moments, you know, where I was a bit lost, if I'm honest. I had a vague sense of what we wanted to do, investing the next generation of community leaders, seeing change happen from within local communities. And I was trying to describe, John Perkins said, "Why on earth are you leaving, you know, Australia or Bangkok to go to Birmingham?" And I always say for the weather, but no one kind of believes me for some reason. So he pushed me a little bit on what my real reasons were. And I tried to explain, you know, what we want to try and do in a particular place. Lots of the kind of work we do, you can't just read about it or hear about it. You've got to feel it and taste it and be immersed in it. And then people can go and do other things. So we're hoping to be able to do that in inner city Birmingham. And he looked at me and he said, "I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to grow a seedbed. People will come and learn and grow, and you'll provide all kinds of nutrients and manure and all kinds of things that will help people grow. Some will be replanted in other places. Other people will grow and an ecosystem will happen. But you want to grow seedbeds." And that's what we've been trying to do here in Winston Green for over 10 years now. And it's different from a church plant, although we have planted two churches, in that our primary focus is raising up local community leaders, using what's strong in the local community to address what's wrong. And so we have all kinds of programs to kind of do that. But the idea is to really discover and connect and release the potential of local people and places. And when we do that, a seedbed kind of emerges. And sometimes that benefits the direct neighborhood, but sometimes it also helps people to be replanted in other places and see that happening. And Seedbeds Now is working in Australia and Ukraine and Myanmar and in lots of different cities across the UK. But it all started with that call to grow a seedbed.
No, that's really helpful. So in the Gospels, Jesus talks about the man of peace. Is that kind of what you're looking for in a community leader? Someone who's sympathetic, may not be a believer yet?
Yes, that's right. So our Changemaker programs work exactly like that. So you have a local church or a local community, a Christian agency. It's looking around at the local community, and it can do two things. It can do things to the community or for the community, or it can take the time to discover those people of peace, those ones who God's already been working on, and how can we incubate their ideas and their hopes and their dreams for their own community. And when you do that, it's amazing what can happen. I mean, we learned this in Klong Toei, some of 100,000 people in a square mile. If you did a needs analysis, we would still be there 20 years later. But if you try and discover what's strong, and we were able to do that in all kinds of ways. Most famously was one of our neighbors, her name was Poo, P-O-O. She was a brilliant cook. And when the price of rice went through the roof and she wasn't able to sell food out the front of her house like she normally would, Ange worked with her to start a cooking school using her strengths in cooking and her personality and all that she had to help a cooking school. And, of course, it took off. It became the number one thing to do on TripAdvisor. She did a cookbook, Cooking with Pooh, and Jamie Oliver cooked with her. If you look up Jamie Oliver and Cooking with Pooh, you'll see him with an apron that said, I cooked with Pooh and I liked it.
Yeah.
And so these kinds of approaches where we take the time to get to know people and the gifts and passions and talents and release that, that's what we love doing. So nearly all our programs have some kind of dragon's den type thing at the end where people have worked hard at incubating their ideas for change, coming out of their personal stories, listening to their timelines and finding their strengths, all those kinds of things, and then helping them with compassion, resilience, innovation. They pitch their idea. And it's amazing. Downstairs today, so I'm at Lodge Road Community Church. It was a failing kind of URC church that was about to close. Now we'll have hundreds of people in coming through its doors each day, including a new worshiping community here. But it's, you know, it's people who are doing knit and natter groups because they were passionate about it. It's people doing push bikes. They're at the New Roots Bike Ministry. It'll be people who have talents and gifts in cooking. And so we've got a community calf that serves hundreds of people each week. You couldn't do it the other way around. You couldn't say, I want to find someone with a funny name called Pooh and then build a cooking school around. It doesn't work like that. You've kind of got to follow your nose, discover those talents and release them as best we can.
Thanks, Ash. And particular values you have that kind of underpin your work?
Well, first of all, compassion. Compassion's crucial because if you just do things out of a mechanical kind of computerized model, it never seems to work. You can do it. So you've got to really love people and places. And by places, I mean, yeah, I think places do call us as well as people. A place we define as somewhere big enough to live a lot of life in, small enough to become a known character, the unfolding drama of that place. Leslie Newbegin, people may have heard of, was in our neighborhood. He wrote some of his best material I read going through theological college in the 90s, Gospel in a Plural Society, Foolishness to the Greeks. But he said the role of the local church is to be a sign, a foretaste, and an instrument of God's coming kingdom, God's coming reign in a place for which it is responsible. And so this place making, believing in people, being compassionate, not just to people, but to the place itself and having a sense of responsibility for it, I think is really crucial for us. I think innovation is really important. If things have been working, we just maintain them. But things are not working in so many places around our communities, our systems, our churches, our education systems. And so we have to find new ways. We have to be willing to experiment, keep the mission really central, but be willing to change and adapt our methods. And then the last thing I want to say is around resilience. There is something about having the grit to kind of keep going despite lots of things not working, having a sense of call to do something and digging deep despite so there your compassion, innovation, resilience, they're three common values that happen all the time. And for me, it is around people and places and releasing potential.
Thanks, Ash. And that resilience comment leads me to my next question, because you had a crazily difficult start. You had a wife and a daughter somewhere else being educated. You had things falling through, accommodation falling through. Most people would have given up at that point. You had a strong sense of call.
Yeah, I think that does help, but it gets tested. And there's an old line, around we have these ideals, but there's the ideal, there's the ordeal, and the new deal.
Yeah.
And certainly we had some ideals about what we wanted to see happen, but you're right, all our plans didn't survive impact. We were quite meticulous, actually, about the partnerships and the money and everything, with where we were going to live. But none of those things, within 12 months, all of those things had collapsed. But we still had this sense of call to start a seedbed. And that's really what kind of kept us as a centre to coming back to, that we were called to Winston Green to see a seedbed emerge. And we would just keep going. So I got a job at the local prison. People know Winston Green has one of the biggest prisons in the UK. So I got a job working there and kind of did seedbeds on the side where we got into debt. All kinds of things happened that was really difficult. And eventually we kind of came back. We started a charity called Ubican Community Trust that my wife, Anne, she's a social worker as well as a minister, led for quite a few years. And we started two churches. And so between seedbeds, the church and the charity, those things slowly emerged. But it did, yeah. And Urban Neighbours of Hope, I'd led that for over 20 years, starting in Melbourne and then in Thailand. And so it was quite a thing to let go and to start again, and then to start again and nothing work. My dad's English, my mum's Scottish. I always joke, my dad was a carpenter, my mother's name's Mary. Was there any chance I wouldn't have a Messiah complex?
But you
do have to have some confidence that the risks are worth it. But you do, yeah. I don't know anyone who does anything worthwhile, which there isn't some risk associated with it, but also there isn't some idealism as well as ordeals. And if we can hang in there, really doing the things, keep focusing and keep returning to the things we feel called to, it's amazing what new deal, what resurrection that can happen. And certainly that's true. 10 years since, more than 10 years now, since we moved into Winston Green, all those things we'd hoped for, that kind of prophecy from John Perkins about being a seedbed, that is really happening with housing, with parks, with schools, with churches. This place is becoming a seedbed.
And so when people come and join with you to learn, what are the kind of things you're doing with them?
Yeah, so we have a number of different programs. We have a Pioneers program that we work with the United Reformed Church, Congregational Federation, and Church Mission Society to host here in Winston Green. And so what we want people to be able to do, first of all, is connect with others. We can't do this work by ourselves. And the kind of learning that's required requires connections, both to other people and to God and to places. So connection is really important. I think self-awareness is another thing we work really hard on, whether it's Enneagram or Strength Finders or timelines. Most of our programs have this self-awareness piece, because I think a lot of the best of Christian spirituality is becoming awake to God, awake to ourselves, awake to the place we're in and we're called to be. And so self-awareness is really important. And then there's the equipping. There are just frameworks to learn. There is a more robust theology that often people need to develop over time, particularly where there's failure and disappointment. So we go everything now from non-accredited programs like Changemakers, Pioneers is recognised by the URC, so you can do the training and become a recognised pioneer with the United Reformed Church. But we also work with Nazarene Theological College, going all the way up to master's and PhD programmes, particularly in the area of social and community transformation. I think what all the programmes have in common, though, is this connectedness, self-awareness, and equipping in really practical, down-to-earth ways to see change and to give you some real actions to try. I say try because there's this kind of praxis cycle of trying things, evaluating, planning again, trying some more things. And this cycle of learning helps us go deeper and helps us integrate what we're learning into our mission and ministries.
Ash, when you sent me some blog material, one of them talked about how busy you were in 2023-24, and it sounds like you're getting to that time in perhaps in life, and many leaders face it, of the challenge between being there doing things and equipping others to do them, and in terms of travel and the toll it takes on your body. Where are you up to with that kind of decision making?
Yeah, I always find it so much harder to say no to things. I don't know if anyone can relate to that. But after a while, lots of opportunities emerge. And I think it takes real discernment to try and work out what are the unique things we have to contribute to life. Tony Campolo has been a real influence. I know him personally. And he died last year, and I've been part of a documentary about his life, because Angie and I stood up at Tony Campolo meeting as 18-year-olds. We got married at 20, and for the last 35 years we've been seeing all kinds of change happen, and Tony's been a big partner in all of that, and so we really miss him. But I remember this survey that Tony did of 95-year-olds. I'm 55, so I've got a little while to go, but there was 50 of them who were 95 years old. And he asked the question, if you had your time again, what would you do differently? And there were three common answers: risk more, reflect more, do more things that will live on after you've died. And I really feel that at the moment. At the end of that time we just mentioned, it was particularly hectic. We'd launched No Wastelands, which was kind of my book, holding lots of things together. We had work in Australia and Ukraine and Myanmar, as well as a number of cities across the UK. And I was just a bit exhausted. And I'm not sure I could keep doing this, you know, at the rate we're doing it. And so I went on a pilgrimage. Pilgrimage has been one of the great kind of things for me. And I really felt I had to narrow things down to five kind of areas. I'm not sure why it was five. Brainstorm as much as you kind of want about the things you could be doing over the next, 15, 20 years that you'd really like to do. But what are five really big rocks you want to invest in? And so they went on had a sabbatical in Australia, and I'm on these pilgrimages, which were really important for me. I did the Camino, which is great. I've done St. Cuthbert's Way. There's something for me about just having space to walk and talk and not having all these responsibilities, all these things you haven't done yet, creeping into your mind. And so it is a kind of reboot for me. And five things emerged. I was on the edge of the world of Finisterre, which is right at the end. That the ancients believed it literally was the furthest point you could go in Europe, and the Romans called it Finisterre, end of the earth. And I just sensed five things I needed to do. I needed to invest in Winston Green, see that renewed. I needed to help internationalize seabeds in a more sustainable way. I needed to focus on pioneers who would be able to initiate and support things. I also needed to keep doing pilgrimages, and then I also felt I needed to get that book, the book and the writing kind of out. And those five things kind of directed me for a while. And then I had another kind of moment really last year where lots of those things were happening. And so I needed to kind of, what was I going to do differently? We'd kind of reached the lots of our ends of our own abilities again. And so for me, I really sensed I needed to focus here and be based here in Winston Green and be a guide and support people. And then do as much as I can here at Winston Green and then limit my time outside the neighborhood. And so saying no to a whole lot of invitations overseas, but giving some time to it. but that helped me. So I think part of it is prioritizing with others and trying to work out what's doable. And some of it is, I think, yeah, when you're doing the stuff you love, you do have more capacity. When you're doing the things that God's called you to do, the passion and life flow more easily, I think, than when we're just doing things to survive. One of the advice I was given early on in life was, you know, you can do these kind of jobs, but if, you know, if you're not really cut out for that job, and 60 to 70% of that job isn't really who you are, then, you know, maybe that's not the right job for you. And I feel like in ministry, there is a way, there were a whole lot of jobs that I'm not very good at. If I did them 70% of the time, I would be exhausted and I couldn't do it. But actually, if I do the things I'm good at, if I focus on the things where my strengths and unique contributions are, it's amazing how much energy I get from that. And then hopefully get a team together doing those areas where other people find, find their gifts and talents and passions and can do the things that I can't do. And I guess over the years, I'm much more conscious of my own limitations as I am about the things I'm good at. And if I can, find those people and work with those people who are good at the areas I'm not good at, that helps as well.
Sounds good, Ash. Your calling's been very specific. Certainly the church in the UK is not well represented in inner cities and estates. What sort of reading might help people thinking of this kind of work? Maybe they've got an estate in their neighbourhood, they're not quite sure what to do. Are there books or resources that you would recommend people to go to?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few that I really love and I keep returning to. I think the New Parish book is a really good, important book around the placemaking. I love Shane Claiborne. He's one of my favourite writers. His book, The Irresistible Revolution, I think is brilliant. We've got Shane coming out. Hopefully he'll be in London on the 6th of August that we're trying to bring people together for. Shane's book is really crucial. I would say people like John Perkins, who I mentioned before, Let Justice Roll is a beautiful book. Then there'd be other books that around sustainability, which I think is really important, particularly for those of us who are getting a bit older in the tooth. How do we focus on the things that are important? Charles Ringmer's book, In the Midst of Much Doing, Cultivating a Missional Spirituality, I think is a really good book. Sam Wells, who's going to be our New Begin public lecture giver next year. Sam's book, I think, around working with people rather than for them is a really, really... So there are some of the ones I think about. Christine Pohl's book about building community is really good. I love the way she talks about nurturing gratitude, keeping promises, telling truth, offering hospitality as practices, because I think what happens in our local communities is that they're not really communities often. They're just lots of individuals who are quite isolated, lonely, bump up against each other. But to build community, Christine Pohl's book on hospitality and community is beautiful. So there'd be some I'd recommend.
Excellent. And we'll make sure, of course, we mention No Wasteland as one of those. I'll repeat this in the outro. So
thank you,
Ash, it's been terrific to chat with you. And what would be your hope for the listeners of this conversation? What would you think to themselves? I wish they'd go away with this from how we've chatted.
Yeah, I think one of the things I would love listeners to do is take stock of what's giving you life. And focus on that. Do as much of that as you can, because that's where God's given you the energy and the gifts and the skills for, and to try and staff out all the rest.
Sounds terrific, Ash. Bless you. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Bless you, Andy. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Ash Barker, who heads up Seed Beds in Winston Green area of Birmingham. Go to the website seedbeds.org if you want to find out more about their training opportunities. Ash himself is the author of the book No Wastelands, How to Grow Seedbeds of Shalom in Your Neighborhood. And he mentioned a number of other books. The New Parish by Paul Sparks. The Irresistible Revolution by Shane Claiborne. Let Justice Roll by John Perkins. In the Midst of Much Doing by Charles Ringmer, R-I-N-G-M-A. Sam Wells' book, Being With. And Christine Pohl, P-O-H-L, Living into Community, Cultivating Practices That Sustain Us. And maybe one action that you could take from listening today is to step back and reflect, if you've not done that in a while. Maybe book time, a day or a half day, especially if you're in a transition time yourself for whatever reason. It's in stillness and quiet that you can discover how God might be reordering your steps as you look to him to cultivate desires to do his will. It's my joy to create these shows every week. Always keen to hear from listeners who have ideas of topics to cover or indeed guests that I should interview. So do drop me a line if that's of interest or you have ideas to do that. So this is Andy Peck, your host, thanking you for your company. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.